You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Well, the day has already come to an end on Dalal Street. It is the 3rd of October, the fourth consecutive day of losses on Dalal Street. But the world is getting weirder. The President of the United States wants a moat. And what does he want to fill the moat with? Snakes and alligators. And that is not where the weirdness ends. For the rest of it, you just have to listen on. This is Stories of the Day. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and you're listening to Money Control.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
But before we get to the madness of the American presidency, let's turn, as usual, to India business news first. This is a growing crisis, and we have an update on it. Two directors of HDIL, that is Housing Development and Infrastructure Limited, were arrested today as the investigation of the bankrupt realty companies dealing with the PMC, that is Punjab and Maharashtra Cooperative Bank, picked up pace. Sarang Vadhvan and Rakesh Vadhvan were arrested by the Economic Offences Wing, several TV news channels have reported. PMC allegedly used thousands of fictitious accounts to hide loans it made to HDIL, leading to a loss of at least 4,355 crore rupees. Investigators have also frozen the bank accounts of suspended PMC bank chief Joy Thomas. As per a report on PTI, Corporate India raised almost $0.86 billion or around 6,000 crore rupees through 10 IPOs in the July to September quarter of this year. And going forward, the IPO activity is expected to gain momentum in the first half of 2020. This, according to an Ernst & Young report. According to the EY India IPO Trends Report Quarter 3 2019, Indian stock exchanges, that is BSE and NSE, ranked 6th globally in terms of the number of IPOs in the third quarter of 2019. Speaking of IPOs, the IPO of IRCTC, that is the Indian Railway Catering and Tourism Corporation, was subscribed 77.91 times so far on the final day of bidding today on Thursday. The IPO, to raise about 645 crore rupees, received bids for 157 crore shares against the total issue size of 2 crore scrips, according to data available with the exchanges till the close of the market. IRCTC's IPO was subscribed 3.25 times till the second day of bidding on Tuesday. Equity markets were, of course, closed yesterday on account of Gandhi Jayanti. Bloomberg has reported that a Royal Dutch Shell PLC division took a 20% stake in Indian solar firm Orb Energy as part of a drive to deliver a reliable source of electricity to 100 million people in the developing world by 2030. Orb Energy, which is based in Bangalore, provides credit to small and medium-sized firms to invest in solar panel systems. Founded in 2006, Orb Energy has sold over 160,000 solar systems in India with a total capacity of 75 megawatts. This deal is the latest of several Shell has made in India aimed at reducing energy poverty through investment in Africa and Asia. In 2018, the oil major invested in an Indian company that builds and installs miniature power grids. Niti Aayog CEO Amitabh Kant said today that there'll be many more structural reforms by the government in the coming days to push the economy to a high growth trajectory. In the last 5 years, the economy has grown at about 7.5%. The country's growth rate of 8.1% in the last quarter of 2017-2018 has, of course, as we know very famously, fallen to 5% in the April to June quarter. This, Amitabh Kant said at a World Economic Forum event in New Delhi. He went on to say, and I quote, "The RBI and the government have taken a series of measures to take India back to a high trajectory of growth. The RBI has dropped repo rate by about 110 basis points. That's about 1.1% in 2019 alone. But there are limitations to monetary policy and therefore the government stepped in and took a series of measures," unquote. The government has, of course, announced a series, as we know, of economic boosters, including capitalization of public sector banks, merging some of them, package for exports, and bringing down corporate tax rate. How these will result in the coming days and indeed in the next quarter will remain to be seen. Bharatiya Airtel promoter Sunil Mittal, who currently holds an 8% stake in CG Power and Industrial Solutions Limited, is likely to infuse capital into the fraud-hit company as he looks to lead efforts to turn around the company, said two people aware of the matter, as reported by Mint. Mittal held 8.3% in the company through an entity Bharti as of 30th of June. There was a bit of a recovery for Yes Bank today. Yes Bank Managing Director Ravneet Gill, in a conference call held for investors, analysts and other stakeholders today, allayed investor concerns, saying that the bank has enough liquidity according to market sources. He went on to say the current macroeconomic slowdown has impacted the bank's asset quality, and we're fairly confident that there's no incremental stress building on the bank's loan book. Shares of Yes Bank jumped almost 26% today, first thing in the morning, and by the time it ended, it was almost 30%, bucking the weakness in the broader market. By now, you've heard of the government's mega divestment plans, but are they panning out well? Well, according to Moody's investors, that is a bit of a setback, calling the decision to privatize BPCL, that is Bharat Petroleum Corporation Limited, a credit negative. Moody's said it may not bode well for BPCL's ratings. Moody said stake sale could remove BPCL's links to the government and prompt bond redemption. A group of secretaries on Monday cleared strategic sale of the government's entire shareholding in BPCL, Shipping Corporation of India, THDC India, and Northeastern Electric Power Corporation. It also cleared a sale of 30% equity in Container Corporation of India, CONCOR, from the government bonding. How this will pan out for the government, and if this mega divestment plan is going to yield the results the government expects for it to, we will, of course, keep you updated. Turning very quickly back to Yes Bank for a second, Ravneet Gill said he expects to complete raising as much as $1.2 billion, much sooner than the market expects, as he says, after sales of pledged shares this week eliminated an overhang on the lender's stock. Gill reiterated in an interview today his target of selling $1 billion to $1.2 billion of new shares to private equity investors, technology companies, and family offices. By the end of all of that, the stock had surged about 33%. Yes Bank stock jumped more than 20% earlier in the day, like I told you earlier, right after the call with analysts, and he also reassured them that the forced sale of Rana Kapoor's pledged stake was the main reason why the stock had tumbled in the previous two sessions. Now, I've been wondering which have been the top 10 cleanest railway stations in the country. Now, you have the answer. If you weren't wondering, well, I'll still give you the names anyway. Jaipur, Jodhpur and Durgapur, all in Rajasthan, occupy 1, 2, 3 of the top 10 clean railway stations. Then comes Jammu Tawai, Gandhinagar, Suratgarh, Vijayawada, Udaipur City, Ajmer and Haridwar. So basically, Rajasthan occupies as many as 7 positions in the top 10. And what about dirty? That would go to Tamil Nadu. Perungalathur in Tamil Nadu, Guindy also in Tamil Nadu, occupy number 1 and 2 of the top 10 dirty railway stations. Then there's Delhi's Sadar Bazar, Velachery in Tamil Nadu, Guduvancheri in Tamil Nadu, Singapore Malkoil in Tamil Nadu, Ottapalam in Kerala, Paramanthangal in Tamil Nadu, Araria Court in Bihar, and Khurja in Uttar Pradesh are the top 10 dirtiest railway stations. What else has been happening in the world of business? In the INX media case, P. Chidambaram is to stay in jail till the 17th of October. The Pakistani army chief holds private meetings to fix economy, and some of them are saying this could be a bit of a soft coup. RBI is likely to cut policy rate on Friday to boost economy, so we'll of course be keeping a close eye on all the stocks that might be affected because of it. NTPC has increased capacity of 2 thermal power stations. Interglobe Aviation shares dropped over 2% today. And the Sensex, of course, slipped 198 points on financial sector woes as well as global trade tussle. This time there could be a global trade war part 2 with the European Union. Indian B2B e-commerce platform Udaan has raised a whopping $585 million from Tencent, Altimeter, Footpath Ventures, Hill House, GGV Capital and City Ventures. The startup's existing investors, that is Lightspeed Venture Partners and DST Global, also participated in this Series D round. According to reports, this is the biggest single funding round raised by a B2B platform in India. With this latest funding, Udaan's valuation has soared right past unicorn status, double unicorn, almost triple unicorn, at $2.8 billion, with a total funding of $870 million. In September of last year, Udaan became one of the fastest Indian startups to reach unicorn status with a valuation of $1 billion. Udaan works as a marketplace for products across lifestyle, electronics, home and kitchen, staples, fruits and vegetables, FMCG, toys, etc., etc., what have you. Its clients are manufacturers and business owners like shopkeepers. It has a network of 3 million retailers in 900 cities who are connected to 20,000 sellers across the country. With this latest funding round, Udaan will invest in further building its platform. The company's co-founders, in a statement, said they were building Udaan as a platform for, as a partner for small businesses to empower these entrepreneurs with technology, financial inclusivity, and supply chain capabilities. The Federation of Indian Mineral Industries, that is FIMI, stated that the delays in auctions of mining leases that are due to expire in March are threatening to disrupt India's iron ore production and are raising the prospect of higher imports. R.K. Sharma, Secretary General of FIMI, went on to say, and I quote, "We see a bleak scenario as of now for the next year for the mining industry and employment in the sector. If we cannot produce, then we will import," unquote. The industry group isn't alone in its prognosis. Citigroup only last month forecast that the country could become a net importer of 25 million to 30 million tons of iron ore. That would be the most in records going back to 2009. In 2015, India embraced competitive auctions as the best long-term approach to clamp down on corruption after scandals over allotments of mines. The slow pace of auctions could push the domestic iron ore market to a deficit from a surplus and lead to a disruption of as much as 55 million tons of production capacity in the next fiscal year. To round off the business news, the number of Indian real estate companies tipped into insolvency has doubled in less than a year since the collapse of a key NBFC. That is, of course, IL&FS. This event has often been compared to the Lehman crisis, which squeezed American funding markets a decade ago. As many as 421 real estate developers entered bankruptcy court by the end of June, up from 209 as of September last year, around the time when the government seized control of IL&FS. The move triggered a credit crunch for smaller financiers and property firms, which depend on funds from shadow lenders. Some people are also saying that this is the reason for the slowdown in the auto sector as well. And what is worse, these numbers are likely to increase. The growing number of insolvencies highlight, of course, the Indian property developers' inability to complete apartments and meet their debt obligations amid the funding crisis. We all know about the stories of JP in Noida. The crunch is feeding into and is in fact worsened by this economic slowdown, which is hitting Indians' demand for goods and services. Exemplified, of course, also by the core sector reduction, this time again in the month of August, 0.5%. India business done. Let's take a look at what else is happening across the country. The government has boosted security at as many as 30 airports, including Delhi's Indira Gandhi International Airport, after Jaish-e-Mohammed threat for revenge against the scrapping of Article 370 from Kashmir, officials have said today. The terrorist group claimed in a letter that it will target prominent leaders and politicians in the country. The CISF, that is the Central Industrial Security Force, has made changes in the security pattern of the Delhi airport and other hypersensitive airports in the country. A senior officer from the Delhi police said, and I quote, "Following such a threat, we have significantly stepped up security in the city. Crowded places like markets, shopping malls and public transport systems are under tight scrutiny to trace any suspicious activity," unquote. Delhi police had sounded an alert on Wednesday yesterday after getting information from central intelligence agencies that some Kashmiri insurgents could carry out terror strikes in the city during the festival season. Justice S. Ravindra Bhatt today became the fifth apex court judge to recuse himself from hearing a plea filed by civil rights activist Gautam Navlakha, who has challenged the Bombay High Court order refusing to quash an FIR lodged against him in the Bhima Koregaon violence case. On the 30th of September, Chief Justice of India Ranjan Gogoi had recused himself from hearing Navlakha's plea. Later, on the 1st of October, the three judges of the bench, Justice N.V. Ramana, R. Subhash Reddy and B.R. Gavai, had also recused themselves from hearing the matter. Now, this is the fifth judge. When the matter came up for hearing today before a bench comprising Arun Mishra, Vineet Saran and Ravindra Bhatt, Justice Bhatt recused himself from hearing the case. When the bench was informed by Navlakha's counsel that the three-week protection given to him by the Bombay High Court was expiring on Friday, the bench said his petition would be heard by another bench on Friday. On the 13th of September, the High Court had refused to quash this FIR lodged against him in the 2017 Bhima Koregaon case, about which we have spoken ad nauseum, and of course for also having alleged Maoist links. The police have also alleged that Navlakha and other accused in the case were working towards overthrowing the government. Navlakha and the other accused were of course booked under the provisions of the Unlawful Activities Prevention Act and the Indian Penal Code. Besides him, four others. Let these names ring out loud and clear, because this is an atrocity and a human rights violation. Varavar Rao, Arun Ferreira, Vernon Gonsalves and Sudha Bharadwaj are still behind bars. The Madras High Court has given permission to the Tamil Nadu government to erect flex banners welcoming Prime Minister Modi and Chinese President Xi Jinping to the state. The two leaders are slated to meet on the 11th and 12th of October in the coastal town of Mamallapuram, south of Chennai. A division bench of Justices M. Sathyanarayanan and N. Seshasayee, however, made it clear that the state has to follow all existing rules in connection with the installation of such banners. This is, of course, in the wake of the death of a 22-year-old woman only recently. Last month, R. Shubhashri, a software engineer, had died after a hoarding crashed on her in a city suburb. Following outrage over Shubhashri's death, political parties asked their respective cadre to stop erecting hoardings and banners. Tamil Nadu government had moved court seeking permission to erect banners, arguing that it was customary on the part of the Ministry of External Affairs to welcome a visiting dignitary with banners. How many banners Xi Jinping will take a look at and feel happy about having landed in the gorgeous city of Chennai is, of course, up to anybody's imagination. But as of now, these flex banners will be back. In some political news reported by NDTV, Congress leader Sanjay Nirupam declared today that he will stay away from the campaign for the Maharashtra election, saying in a tweet that it seems the party does not want my services anymore. He stopped short of quitting the party, but hinted that the day was not far, quote, with the way the leadership is behaving with me. The rebellion, of course, hits the party at a time when many of its leaders in Maharashtra have crossed over to the ruling BJP Shiv Sena camp. In a running feud within the party, Sanjay Nirupam was removed as the chief of the Congress in Mumbai just before the national election earlier this year and was replaced by Milind Deora. After the Congress's disastrous national election outing, in which, of course, the party was wiped out in Mumbai, Mr. Deora also resigned. Deora was, of course, the Congress candidate in South Mumbai with the backing of Mukesh Ambani, if you will. Mr. Nirupam, of course, mocked him, questioning whether the resignation was a ladder to grow politically and suggesting that Deora was angling for a central job. In some sad news, Indian origin tech millionaire Tushar Atre, who was kidnapped from his home in California's Santa Cruz earlier this week, has been found dead inside his BMW. Tushar Atre, owner of digital marketing company Atrinet, which caters to Silicon Valley corporate businesses, was kidnapped from his house around 3 a.m. during a crime, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office said. Sheriff's deputies said they responded to Mr. Atre's home in the 3000 block of Pleasure Point Road after receiving a 911 call. Amid reports which have suggested that former Prime Minister Manmohan Singh had accepted Pakistan's invitation to go there for the opening of the Kartarpur corridor, the Chief Minister of Punjab, Captain Amrinder Singh, told media today that he did not believe Manmohan had any such plans. As for himself, he was not going to Pakistan for the Kartarpur ceremony, will only visit the Gurdwara via corridor, said Captain Amrinder Singh. Well, BKG Foods has something in common with another 150,000 brands because now it has roped in Amitabh Bachchan as brand ambassador. This is not important news, but I just felt like saying it because is there anything left that the man hasn't endorsed? If you do know of any such thing, do write in. All right, turning quickly to international financial markets, what's been happening on Wall Street? We start as usual with America. U.S. stock futures a little changed today as Wall Street comes off a rather tumultuous 2 days, which has seen the Dow drop more than 800 points. The S&P 500 is coming its first back-to-back drops of more than 1% this year, and the Dow, S&P and Nasdaq have all fallen this past week. The Dow is, of course, on track for its largest week of loss since the final week of May, and the S&P 500 could post its biggest weekly decline since the week ending the 2nd of August. Well, we have some more news on the trade war. This time, I'm not going to say China, so that's a nice change of pace. This time, it's going to be EU. The US is all set to impose tariffs on European Union goods after a victory at the World Trade Organization. The US trade representative released a list of products it plans to target, including aircraft and agricultural products, intensifying the Trump administration's global trade battle. Is this a distractionary tactic, considering all the mess he finds himself in because of the impeachment? Well, who can ever tell? If there was a method to his madness, perhaps we might have been able to guess, but there isn't any. Asian markets have tanked after a below-par US jobs report compounded worries about the world's top economy, while Washington opened up another front, like I said, with the EU. Stocks fell sharply in Tokyo, Sydney, and Seoul today as investors reacted to the surprise new tariffs and also heavy losses in Europe and on Wall Street on Wednesday. Tesla has delivered a record 97,000 vehicles globally during the third quarter, an impressive milestone that still fell short of investor expectations and set a tough hurdle for CEO Elon Musk to meet his year-end goals. The company's stock tumbled about 4% in the pre-market. It wasn't just enough. It was certainly impressive, but certainly not enough to allay the concerns that the market has. Tesla's new smart summon feature is drawing scrutiny, meanwhile, from U.S. Traffic Safety Agency as people use it in crowded parking lots. This, according to a report by CNBC. PepsiCo has got a boost. The food and beverage giant is expected to post another rise in quarterly earnings, helped by strong demand for its line of wholesome snacks and carbonated water. The company's stock is up about 25% this year. The Swedish retail giant H&M posted third quarter profits, up 25% on last year. This is, of course, a sign its new strategy, which is fewer discounts and stores, is paying off. Despite challenges facing the fast fashion sector, demand remains robust for H&M. This is, of course, in sharp contrast to what is happening with Forever 21 that we've been speaking about for the past few days. They're shutting shop in many, many countries, including several of its stores in Asia. All right, turning very quickly to international political news, we start things off with neighboring Pakistan. Pakistan's already powerful military is taking an even greater role in running the country as the economy stumbles. Army Chief Qamar Javed Bajwa has privately met top business leaders to find ways to bolster the economy. At the meetings, Bajwa asked business leaders how to fix the economy and what would lead them to make investments. Someone hear the word coup? Well, that's probably what it is. Some of the meetings resulted in prompt decisions, including sending instructions to, well, top government officials. The military has seen a direct impact from the economic slowdown. Defense spending has been frozen in the 2020 fiscal year budget for the first time in more than a decade. Many business leaders and economic analysts in Pakistan actually welcome a greater role of the generals. A beneficent dictatorship is probably the sort of thing Pakistan is used to. They view Prime Minister Imran Khan's party as inexperienced compared, of course, with the military. But others are concerned about what an ever-increasing role for the military means for Pakistan's democracy. Pakistan's finance ministry downplayed the extent to which the army influences economic policy. Pakistan is, of course, going through an unusual period in which the democratically elected government and the army appear to be working in sync, also read by other people as Imran Khan is the puppet of the military. The army itself has a substantial stake in the private sector. It runs the 4G Foundation, which is Pakistan's second largest conglomerate, let that sink in, with interests in everything from food to power. Yet, despite its business interests and all-pervading presence in most aspects of Pakistani life, the move to seek an active role in shaping economic policy has still caught many by surprise. The army is stepping into its new economic role at a time when the slowdown has hurt Imran Khan's ratings. For the first time since the elections in July last year, Khan's approval rating has fallen to about 18% from 64% during elections last year. Even Trump is doing better. Some Facebook news now, as usual. A new ruling from the ECJ, that is the European Court of Justice, could spell trouble for Facebook. Courts in the European Union can order Facebook to remove worldwide comments by users of its service that have been declared illegal. The EU's highest court ruled today. The court ruled that EU law, quote, does not preclude Facebook from being ordered to remove worldwide information disseminated via a social network platform, unquote. It will be up to member states to enforce this, according to the ruling. The ruling stems from a case brought to an Austrian court by Eva Glavishing Plaischek, who demanded the removal of a Facebook post concerning her that the court found insulted and defamed her, and which could be seen by any Facebook user. How this will have impact in not just EU countries, but across the pond in America and indeed in Asia will be interesting to watch. So what's happening in the impeachment drama? The first testimony in the impeachment inquiry kicked off today when Kurt Volker, the former US special envoy to Ukraine, appears before a trio of congressional committees. Volker is a longtime GOP foreign policy expert, that is conservative, but he's viewed by the White House as not being a strong supporter of Donald Trump. Volker's testimony on what he knows about Trump's effort to pressure Ukraine to investigate his 2020 political rivals could be damaging to the president and his allies. Trump is, of course, still waging a verbal war on the impeachment effort, lashing out at just about everybody, including a reporter yesterday who just wanted to ask a follow-up question. But the man, i.e. Trump, went ballistic and said, ask the president of Finland, the nice man standing here, a question instead of actually asking me a follow-up question, which could, who knows, incriminate me. He, of course, went on to also say that he didn't say that. But there was a report on the New York Times written by two people who have also come out with a book, which claimed that Donald Trump wanted a moat along the southern border with Mexico, and not just a moat that was filled with snakes and alligators. And no, it was not just one of those crazy ideas, because, you know, there's no bad idea in a brainstorm, but no, he actually asked his aides to go get a proper estimate for how much it would cost to procure all of these snakes and alligators. All of the late night hosts, of course, picked up on that and had a bit of a good time with that. But that is in Trump world. Now on to the other shit show going on across the pond. Deal or no deal, the UK is leaving the European Union at the end of this month. Who said that? Of course, the Prince of Clowns, Boris Johnson. He said this in a new speech as his new Brexit proposal was given to the EU. Brussels, of course, said boo. The most noteworthy part of that proposal, of course, involved the Irish border. Now, that is serious business. It has been one of the big sticking points in the negotiations. The 1998 Good Friday Agreement, or what is known as officially as the Belfast Agreement, which helped bring an end to decades of conflict. If you want to get a human picture of what the conflict was like, I suggest that you watch Derry Girls, which is a comedy on Netflix. Now, this 1998 agreement brought an end to decades of conflict and explicitly prohibited any physical checks at the border between Northern Ireland, which remains part of the UK, which is where Belfast is, and the Republic of Ireland, which is an EU member, whose capital is, of course, Dublin. Under Johnson's new proposal, there would be a few limited border checks, something that the European Union has indicated it does not want. How this will be read by the EU, we will see in the next few days. Just going back to the impeachment drama for a little bit, the Democrats are not fooling around. Why do I say that? Because Nancy Pelosi said quite as much. Donald Trump has, of course, been accused of inciting violence after a day in which he appeared to unravel over the impeachment inquiry. He, of course, again accused Adam Schiff, or Little Adam Schiff, or Shifty Schiff. So he has several names for him. It shows you that Trump is angry when he can't quite fixate on one nickname. That means he's floundering and is in a bit of panic. He, of course, denounced the inquiry as bullshit. I can say it because the American president has said it in public, so I guess I can report it as a reporter. He's used the word on Twitter, little kids. If your parents said, don't use Twitter because there's bad language, here it is being sanctioned by the president of the United States. Adam Schiff, of course, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said on Wednesday that the Congress was simply not fooling around and insisted that the inquiry would not be slowed down by presidential stonewalling. All right, what's happening in the world of tech? Let's take a quick look at WhatsApp. It's looking like WhatsApp is working on a feature that would let users' messages disappear or self-destruct after a set amount of time. Business Insider reports that the news was spotted on WA Beta Info, or WhatsApp Beta Info. According to this, the feature first appeared in the 2.19.275 version of WhatsApp's Android app, but it might not be available for all beta users. This new feature may be part of Zuckerberg's master plan for his firm's services, including WhatsApp. In March this year, Zuckerberg said the various Facebook-owned messaging platforms would work better together, would have end-to-end encryption, and have auto-deletion by default. There are some new features coming out of Google as well. It's rolling out a cluster of new features that aim to make it easier for customers to support and control what data they share with the company when using apps like Maps, YouTube, and Google Assistant. Users will now be able to turn on incognito mode in Google Maps to stop the app from saving your location activity and can more easily instruct YouTube and the assistant to delete your history. I'll believe it when I see it. Just like there was a lady in the railway station who was singing Ek Pyar Ka Nagma Hai and she went on to become a bit of a viral sensation. Ranu Mojumdar, I think her name was. I'm not entirely sure. She became a bit of a sensation and Lata Mangeshkar was in a bit of controversy about saying, oh, you have to become original. Although I believe she was taken out of context. Now, why do I bring that up? A similar thing has happened in Los Angeles. A homeless woman who went viral after she was filmed singing opera in Los Angeles has reportedly been offered a record deal. Emily Zamurka, as she has been identified, was shown performing Puccini's O Mio Babbino Caro, which is an aria that was made famous by Maria Callas, in a video tweeted by LAPD headquarters last week. The clip has since received more than a million views, leading calls for someone to help her become a professional opera singer. Now it was revealed that Zamurka is actually a classically trained musician who moved to the US from Russia more than 20 years ago. I smell spy. She, of course, became homeless after falling ill and racking up huge medical bills, and her prized $10,000 violin was reportedly stolen while she was living on the streets. Now Zamurka has caught the attention of a Grammy-nominated producer who reportedly wants to offer her a recording contract. That is your Himesh Reshammiya. His name in America is Joel Diamond. Well, that's that. With that, I come to the end of all that you absolutely had to know for this day, the 3rd of October, a Thursday. But I'd, of course, be remiss if I didn't tell you what happened in the market. The BSE Sensex lost 199 points, or 0.52%, to settle at 38,106.87. Vedanta, which was down around 5%, was the worst performer. And Yes Bank, up 33%, the biggest gainer. Don't, I mean, it started from a very low base considering it had lost quite as much as it has over the past few days. Now, through the day, the Sensex ranged between 38,300 and 37,957. On the Nifty 50, it was 47 points down, or ending at 11,313. Market breadth remained in favor of the bears. That's it from me for the day. I'll, of course, see you first thing in the morning tomorrow with all that you absolutely have to know about the markets before going into trade. And I'll also give you a few stock picks to choose from so that you don't have to think. My whole job is to make sure you don't read the newspaper, because lend me your ears for 20 minutes and I'll catch you up with the world. Do write into us, mcpodcast@nw18.com. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.
And now a word on a subscription product. Money Control Pro offers actionable investment ideas, independent research, insights and analysis from the world of business, economy, politics and policy. Get access to Money Control Pro at ₹599 for a year. Use code GETPRO. For more information, check out the Money Control website or mobile app.